You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and parents and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. It wasn't considered a serious problem until two high school shooters at Columbine High School changed that. They went on a shooting rampage that killed 13 and left dozens injured before turning their guns on themselves. It was the worst incident of school violence in the history of the United States. But it wasn't the last. Charles Andrew Williams, 15, decided to get back at his tormentor at Santana High School in Santee, California. He fatally shot two people and wounded 13 others. Joining me via phone is Dr. Jennifer Freed. She is an author and family and child behavior expert. She's the co-founder of AHA, Attitude, Harmony, and Achievement, a youth-focused nonprofit that works to end bullying, improve self-esteem, and empower teens through emotional learning and creative expression. Dr. Freed, welcome to 411 Teen.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for having such an important show for people to tune into.
Why is bullying a problem? I guess we'll start there. Why is it a problem?
Well, whenever there is a power differential and persistent acts of verbal or physical violence, it's a problem because it hurts everyone involved. It hurts the perpetrator, it hurts the victim, and it hurts the bystander. So the impact of a bullying incident is not just with the two involved, it's everyone attached to them. And it really is a detriment to our working together as a society.
Do you feel bullying is on the increase, or are we just more sensitive to it? Or the flip side, are people just getting meaner?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily on the increase, but I do think in this climate that we're in right now, name-calling and meanness has become much more on the media airwaves, not your show, of course, but we have seen a rise recently in the last 8 months of children behaving very meanly and badly toward each other and citing things they've heard on TV, on the internet, or the radio, and saying, well, if adults can talk like that, why can't I?
So would you say that home has an influence on that? Home, media, the milieu, all of the above. If they're doing that in the home and they're not being redirected, then you also have the parents feeding into this.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Now, so many of our parents work not one but two jobs. And so sometimes a lot of the influences are more on the school and community playgrounds or after school than they are in the home. So I think it really behooves all of us as adults to remember that everything we say and do is copied by the young. Mm-hmm. And so check ourselves first, because all of this behavior is modeled. Young people don't come out of the womb, babies, wanting to be mean to each other. That's just not really the way it is. It's that they get trained into disrespecting or disregarding other people's feelings and experiences.
That is a very powerful statement and a very accurate statement, and you hear it so many times when you are talking about some of the ills, for lack of a better term, of society that we are experiencing. You know, whether it's bullying or being unfair, discriminatory, if you don't stop it, if you don't say something about it, if you don't raise an eyebrow, they're going to continue. And kids emulate so much what is around them.
Yes, Let me give you an example of something that I'm practicing, and I would invite your listeners to do as well.
Okay.
I have a lot of different friends and work acquaintances through the type of work that I do. And every now and then I'll be with somebody, and they'll start a conversation that's really belittling or mean about somebody else. And they think it's clever, and they think it's a way of joining with me on attacking someone else. I don't care if it's somebody I know or even a public figure.
Mm-hmm.
What I say at that point is, I'm not comfortable with having a negative conversation. Let's see if we can steer this conversation to things that are good about life or things that we want to contribute. And I think it's up to us to interrupt negativity and not condemn or confront or be mean back to people, but offer them a different thing to talk about. Because I think people devolve in conversations and then they reinforce negativity. And we don't need that in this country or anywhere. We need to really focus on what's possible, what's positive, and what we can do together.
Well, that indeed is true. And if we can convey that message just about to everyone in society, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about road rage. I mean, what happens in that? You know, same type of thing where you become upset and you can't deal with the issue in an appropriate way. So I appreciate your comments. You were compelled to establish an organization known as AHA, and I wanted you to talk about that and share that with the listening audience, because it deals with violence, and essentially we're talking about violence and aggression.
Exactly. Well, what happened is I have been a practicing therapist, educator, and author for a long time, but when Columbine happened, it shattered our country because it was one of those wake-up calls of our young are not doing that well if this kind of thing could happen anywhere. And I, at that point, with my partner, Randy Friedman, we started an organization, a nonprofit called AHA, Attitude, Harmony, and Achievement, because we believed that we needed to teach young people social and emotional skills so that they could cope with and deal with all of the unhappiness and suffering and isms of this world, so that they could connect to one another instead of want to hurt each other or hurt themselves. So we started AHA as a summer program that focused on social and emotional learning and ending the isms through creative art. And that first summer, it was so popular, and the teens had such a good time, and the adults did too, that we were featured on our local front page as doing something positive and new. And that summer was 20 youth and about 15 adult faculty who were volunteering their time. And now we have grown to serve 2,500 youth directly in and out of school. And those youth lead peer circles with an additional 5,000 other people.
Wow, I applaud you. That is fantastic.
Well, we're very lucky that we have been diligent and have had great local support and have an extraordinarily committed staff who sees it much more as a calling than just a job. So we have 20 people working with us who believe that this world can be a much better place than it is right now, and that we have a whole generation of people that can come up and be leaders in a style in which we would all be excited about. Because right now, looking around at leadership, it's sometimes very, very discouraging because we don't have a high moral standard. We just don't.
No, we certainly don't. That's a good point. For the listening audience, how can they connect with you and with AHA?
We have our website, ahaab.org, and they can connect there to AHA or connect with me. We are coming out with a series of manuals and workbooks that we use in our curriculum, and there'll be about 5 different offerings that will be available by, I'd say, August Okay. So we have 4 workbooks, a manual, and there'll be other books coming out. And I think it's taken us since 1999 to really refine our methodologies and really have very accessible exercises for people. And we want to share what we've learned through very affordable workbooks and manuals.
Oh, well, I look forward to receiving one of those. Would you share just what bullying involves?
Well, that's another thing we want to clarify. Bullying involves a power differential, mm-hmm. and it's not just a one-time incident. Oh. So people can be mean, people can be annoying, people can be cruel, people can hit somebody. Mm-hmm. But bullying is a persistent, repeating pattern of intimidation and assault, either verbally or physically, that has something to do with somebody having power over somebody else. So we want to distinguish that from just being nasty or being
right.
obnoxious. Bullying is something that takes place over time and has an intent of subordinating somebody through a type of behavior that's demeaning.
Okay. Does the bully set out or intend to bully initially, or is it something that just evolves?
Well, that really depends on the person who's bullying. And
mm-hmm.
actually what we do in AHA is we don't call them bullies because that gives them a stigma as a noun. We talk about people that have bullying behavior because
mm-hmm.
we've now worked with a lot of these young people that have bullying behavior. And underneath that, they're just in a world of pain, and they're just youth that really need a lot of help. So we don't want to stigmatize people that are doing the bullying either. We want to get them the help they need. Some young people are in reaction to a lot of suffering in their home life or personal life, and so they actually are setting out to make somebody feel as bad as they do, and it's very intentional. Other people fall into incident where they're bullying somebody one time and they get a real reaction out of people that are watching, and that encourages them to continue this pattern of behavior. Something that's very important for your audience to know is the quickest way to stop bullying behavior is not the victim, not the person bullying, but the bystander.
Let me ask you to hold your thoughts and we'll get right back at you. We're going to take a brief break. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I was talking with Dr. Jennifer Freed. Dr. Freed, I had to interrupt you. We had to take a brief break, but I wanted to ask you to continue.
Well, I was saying the people that have the most power to stop bullying behavior are the bystanders, the people that are watching, because a lot of people with bullying behavior are getting a reaction out of the crowd, even if it's one or two other people. And if those people can go up to the person with bullying behavior, always making sure they're safe, but say to that person, hey, this isn't cool. Are you okay? What's going on with you that you would treat somebody like this? Let's go do something else. The people that have the most power are the people that are bystanders, and they can turn into upstanders, which
mm-hmm.
means they have the say about whether it continues or doesn't. And another really preventive measure people can take is the most vulnerable people are usually the targets of the bullying behavior because they seem like they could be easily subordinated. Mm. If you want to stop bullying behavior, always reach out to the people that seem most vulnerable because those people need more support. And usually people that are seeking out to intimidate don't go to a group of people. They go to somebody that's like
mm-hmm.
a lone wolf or off by themselves.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Because basically what we're talking about is just another form of aggression. Aggressive behavior and bullying behavior are common in elementary school to middle school and senior high. Some statistics suggest that Up to 30% of all American children have been victims of bullying behavior at some point, and the same number may have described themselves as engaging in some form of bullying behavior. Bullying behavior can range from teasing to stealing lunch money or a group of students physically abusing a classmate. Dr. Fried, will you distinguish for us the difference between normal teasing from bullying behavior? When does it cross the line? I think that's important to hear.
Normal teasing is a back and forth type of thing. Hey, you with the curly hair. Hey, you with the... And there's laughing to it, and there's affection to it, and there's also another type of relationship besides the teasing. So in other words, if you and I start teasing each other, that we also can talk about politics and religion, and we have other ways that we're relating. That's not our only way that we relate. With bullying behavior, that's usually the only way that's going on between two people, is somebody is doing something very intentionally mean and subordinating to somebody else. So the difference is, one is in the context of an ongoing, playful, and robust relationship, and the other is an action that's taking place repeatedly with no other context to it. There's no other good thing happening. It's just this very demeaning behavior that's consistent. The other thing about teasing is, usually behind teasing, there's still empathy. So if I cross the line with you and say something that I see hurts your feelings, I will want to repair that quite quickly and be friends.
Okay.
And that's very different than bullying behavior, where there's no interest in how you feel about it.
Okay. Based on your years of experience, how common would you say bullying behavior is? And I know it would, I guess it would vary depending upon the developmental period. But let's look at adolescence or look at middle school.
Yeah.
How common is it?
I think it's very, very common developmentally for young people in their neurological changes between 12 and 24 and their hormonal changes to feel quite upset, aggressive, irritable, moody. That's all in there. It's like a flame with gasoline. But if you have all of that and you don't have healthy outlets for your anger and irritation and frustration and depression, then people go one of two ways. Young people go into acting out or acting in. Bullying behavior is a real acting out of all of that turmoil. And depression and self-harming is the acting in.
So they're coping mechanisms. They're coping mechanisms for dealing with what you one is confronted with.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think that's a great way to say it. If you look at it as they're always attempts to manage somebody's pain, then you can get behind it and think, how could we help this person so that they had more options instead of acting out this kind of pain by making somebody else really suffer?
Well, for the listening audience, what is it like to be the victim of bullying behavior?
Well, it's horrible. I mean, when somebody is persistently subordinated in this mean and intentional physical or verbal way, it makes them feel unworthy, unsafe, unloved, and it is like taking a piece of flesh every time. And a young, healthy child in a very good family can go on to that schoolyard or community environment and be bullied for a certain amount of time and be somebody that just feels like dying. It's so awful because it's so shaming, and the person feels so powerless and so hopeless. And also, no matter what, wonders, what did I do to deserve this? Why me? And often they don't have a logical answer, so they think there must be something so awful and so unlovable about me that I'm the target of this. It's super debilitating, and it leads to all kinds of problems.
It increases, you know, if someone is insecure in the first place and they're vulnerable, which you mentioned earlier, that they become even more insecure and more vulnerable. Their anxieties increase.
Yeah. And what I see with people that have experienced a lot of bullying behavior is they internalize that hatred and they start taking out on themselves even more hatred, and they even are more self-destructive than they were before.
Why don't the victims stand up or confront the bullying behavior? Well, that's a part of it. You find that the victims do not stand up. And you mentioned what we have to do is work on those bystanders, because the bystanders will just do that. They stand by, and they may not say anything.
Right. It's the bystanders you have to work on. Mm-hmm. Just remember, in our brain, when we're being attacked, we have fight, flight, freeze, or faint. And with a bullying situation, there's usually somebody that's way more intimidating physically or socially than the person that's being bullied. So the fight isn't really going to be activated in the flooding of the brain hormones. It's going to be freeze, faint, or flee.
Mm-hmm.
So the victim of bullying behavior is the least likely to have any resources to confront.
Well, what's going on when we look at these bystanders? When they stand around and see someone being subjected to this behavior and do nothing or say nothing?
I think for the most part, and this is both the negative and the positive. The negative is they don't know what to do. So they feel scared. And the positive is, at AHA, we're training them all what to do, and they are stepping up. Mm-hmm. So to me, the real key is training the whole campus on how to create a peaceful and welcoming culture so that bullying behavior is highly unpopular and not tolerated. And if you train a whole cadre of students on how to interrupt bullying behavior with humor and curiosity, then really, you see a diminishment of that behavior pretty quickly.
As we look at the antecedents of the bullying behavior, you mentioned how it's really all around us. And our environment, our milieu, plays a significant role. In looking at that milieu that we all are subjected to, what role does the media play, in your opinion, in contributing to bullying behavior?
Well, I have strong opinions on this, so everybody take a breath.
That's okay. That's what we want to hear.
Okay, I think it's reprehensible that celebrities, politicians, corporate leaders, you name it, can be shown on media saying awful, bigoted, mean, sexist, racist remarks and not have the media person in the moment say something like, the remark that you just made was offensive and sexist and racist, and I don't know how you could possibly represent whatever they're representing and feel okay about young people listening to this type of language. Wouldn't that be different?
Yes,
in the moment, every time, if somebody said something hateful about a whole class of people or type of person, that right then and there, ethically, morally, that news outlet would say that was inappropriate language. I'm shocked that you would say that as a reflection of whatever they are. That's what I would like to see, because otherwise it's a tacit condoning of anyone and everyone using hate language, and it's not okay.
Well, I support you strongly in what you have to say, and hope that others would listen and hear you and make the necessary adjustments. Because it sends a message, a very clear message, of what we accept and what is tolerable. And right now, the message is not good. So
yes, and here is a positive, and I will say this. No matter what your political affiliation is,
right,
because I know we have a great country of divided opinions,
mm-hmm.
The one thing we can all agree on with President Barack Obama is that he has been the model of social and emotionally intelligent language and behavior. He speaks temperately. He's even toned. He does not speak revengefully about people. He is very thoughtful and contemplative when he's being attacked. So no matter what we think about his policies, there's tons of room to disagree on that. We have had a president, and we still do, who has really worked on himself to be somebody that young people could look up to in terms of his conduct.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with you, but there are some who disagree strongly. And I guess that's what it's all about. There's some who really feel that he does not portray the strong image that they feel the United States of America president should convey. I think they feel like we need to be antagonistic and, you know, I can go on
well,
and on.
I think, but as a psychologist, I'll tell you, we just look at what makes people tick,
right,
and what is actually healthy. Mm-hmm. And here's what's true. We've had thousands of years of tough, aggressive leadership, and we have never not had wars. There is a link. What we need is, in leadership, thoughtful, collaborative, socially and emotionally intelligent thinking, and great dialogue where all people are participating with respect. Then we can start imagining a world in which people don't take violence as their response to disagreement.
But that's contrary to our existence. That's contrary to our birth. And I'm talking about the United States here. That's just, yes, you're right. I totally agree with you. But, hey, our behaviors don't say that. Okay?
Well,
The one who talks in that moderated, quiet tone and is very sensitive and thoughtful is not seen as strong. They are seen as weak. So we have to change the whole perspective, the whole viewpoint. And that's why I ask, what role does media play? You know, in that same voice, what role does the school play? Because these kids are being reinforced. We hear time after time after time from the victims how the teachers did nothing. No one did anything, even those who were in a position to change that behavior, to intervene. They didn't intervene. So, you know, I understand and strongly support what you're saying, but that's just not the reinforcement that these kids are getting in their environment, whether it's at school or at home.
You're correct that there is still a long way to go and that we have a history and the origins of this country of violence. And the other thing that we have as a history in this country is an idealism, and a commitment to democracy. And I also believe that we were founded on the principles of liberation for all people. And so I take it as my mission in this lifetime, with all my partners and all collaborators like you, to transform the old meme of violence and might as the way of the future into the idea that it's an old, dead pattern, and we need to recommit ourselves to the young people. And my hope is, because I work with all these young people, that there is a better way. And here's the great part, is with the 2,500 young people we're working with, they're like fish to water with this new paradigm. They want a more peaceful world. They want a world where diversity is celebrated. They want a world where softness and kindness is also a masculine trait. They do feel hopeful about a new way of being, because what they've inherited in terms of a social environment, they don't see as that great.
Indeed, that is the case. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. Today we are talking about violence, aggressive behavior, bullying behavior. I'm talking with Dr. Jennifer Freed in California. We're going to take a break and we'll return momentarily. Dr. Jennifer Freed joins 411 Teen. This hour we're examining bullying behavior and aggressive behavior. How do school systems address this specific behavior? I mean, from teachers to administrators, do you have suggestions as to how they can address this behavior, Dr. Freed?
Yes. In Santa Barbara, in parts of Colorado, and in Oakland, California, there's a movement called Restorative Approaches. And we have found in Santa Barbara, so I'll just speak for here, that restorative approaches is by far the most effective way to create more peaceful campuses and have people be more accountable for bullying behavior. So what restorative approaches is it's a departure from the punishment mentality, which is you've done something wrong, we're going to punish you and separate you from other people until you have, you know, paid off your dues for having done something horrible.
Right.
And so what that does is it takes somebody that's already hurting and doing bad things and keeping them out of a social environment where they could be learning. And then when they come back in, everybody goes, oh, there's that bad person. And so then they get reinforced for that. Restorative approaches says, what was the harm? Who's responsible for the repair? How can we make things right? And let's get everybody that's been impacted, at least representatives from everybody, and talk about it in a circle with a skill facilitator until things are made right. And what we find with this model, let's say there's been bullying behavior, and let's say it's from Joe to Ethan. Joe and Ethan get in a circle with maybe a parent of Ethan, a parent of Joe, an administrator of the school, a friend of both of them, and they start really talking about what went down, what was Joe thinking, how was the impact to Ethan, what does Ethan and everyone need for Joe to make it right and come back in to the school feeling like he has integrity and he can do something right instead of do something wrong? And we see that this actually works because it doesn't stigmatize anybody, and the person who's been the victim gets to have their say and talk to the person about what it was like for them, so they get a catharsis and they get to to really heal through this, and we find that there's much less repeated behavior in a negative way when there's this actual restorative approach.
Sounds great, and it's effective.
It is great, and Colorado has had more history with it, and so has Oakland, and they have significant statistics on the reduction of violent behavior. Significant.
Why aren't the schools
in that trend?
I was going to say, why aren't the school systems buying into this? Is it that they don't know? They aren't aware of it? Where can one go to get more information about it? Because, you know, it's an approach that sounds like it touches on a number of the different dynamics that are involved in the bullying behavior in the first place.
Exactly, because the bystanders are in there, the adults are in there, the youth are in there. The reason schools haven't adopted it so far is exactly what you were pointing to before. We have been in a very frozen state of an old pattern of education, of politics, where might equals right, punish the quester, but we now know none of that's working. So schools have to be talked to very respectfully about there's a more efficient way to do it, a more cost-effective way to do it, and they have to be open to a new philosophy. I mean,
yeah,
it's a big departure from spare the rod, spoil the child.
That's the key. I think you hit it. Excuse me for interrupting. I was just saying, I think you hit it. That's the key. They've got to be open. They've got to be receptive.
Yeah. And anybody listening right now can go on Google and put in restorative approaches, and you will see so many great examples. They're doing it in Europe. They're doing it here. And it's just something that everybody could consider. And one way to always bring out change is if enough parents say, we want this in our school, and have some pressure applied, you're the taxpayer, to let's investigate it.
Talk a little bit more, and I know you talked about it earlier, about your aha, because I think that that is also an avenue that parents could pursue. Where do you contact? How do you contact AHA? What is it about again? I know it's nonprofit and it works with bullying, and you're trying to improve self-esteem, because all of that is so tied up together. Yeah. They are inextricably bound. You know, if you don't feel good about yourself, then you're going to be vulnerable. You're going to be susceptible. How do you feel good about yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
Well, AHA was founded to create safer, more peaceful, and more fully expressed cultures in home, school, and in our communities. The one program that we have engineered and developed and refined that's super effective in reducing any kind of violent behavior is called AHA Peace Builders. And what we do is we take youth from the schools, about 50 at a time on any campus. We train them in over 10 hours of hands-on curriculum, how to interrupt bullying behavior, how to be an ally, how to have positive, inclusive language, how to facilitate listening circles so everybody feels a part of something. We train them very deeply, and then it becomes a school club. And those 50 youth reach out to approximately 2,000 other people over the course of a school year. And we have a customized web application called peaceq.org. You can look that up, peaceq.org. And that particular web application tracks every single week the actual peace points students are inputting, the circles they're leading, the acknowledging of positive behavior they're doing for other people, and it also helps them keep track of their self-care so that they themselves are healthy. And this has been super effective. We are beyond passionate about AHA Peace Builders and this web application, because we can see that this could be replicable all across America. And the most important part is that the students track their own behavior. So neurologically, they're reinforcing all of the positive mm-hmm. that they're doing, mm-hmm. so it becomes part of their neural networks, and they actually are in life scanning and behaving more positively.
May I ask you, is there a high cost to this? I'm just thinking about school districts that may be interested.
To be honest, if a school district were to adopt it, I think it costs between $30,000 and $50,000 uh-huh. per school per year to fully uh-huh. implement it, which means the training of the 50 youth, mm-hmm. involving the school club. But then remember, for 50 youth serving an additional 2,000, besides just changing the culture of the school in this process, it's a very small price to pay. And then ideally, when the school gets very good at doing this, the mm-hmm. costs go down every year.
Of course.
So in our mind, it's like, how could you not want this in your school?
Right.
If it's creating a campus where everybody feels included.
Well, that indeed is true. Of course, we know a lot of school districts suffer with a lack of funds. But as we look at bullying behavior, for the parents who may suspect that maybe their child is the victim of bullying behavior, they're not really sure, would you give them some suggestions on how to approach their child? In addition, are there indicators that they may identify that will let them know that their child indeed is being bullied?
Yes. Well, any dramatic change in your child's behavior indicates something's going on you don't know about. So it's not like in one day, because we all can be moody when we're young, mm-hmm. but over a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, if you see a real dramatic shift in any direction, you want to find out what's going on with them that you don't know about. And the best way by far to do that is not grilling and investigating them, but instead saying something about your own childhood that was very difficult and challenging, and you wonder if something difficult's going on for them because you've noticed, and you don't say that you're so moody or you're so angry, but you would say, I've noticed that since whenever, there's been these changes in you, and it makes me wonder if there's things going on I don't know about, because I know when I was younger and this was happening to me, I didn't turn to my parents first, and I regret that.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to be available to have multiple conversations, and the only thing I would encourage parents to do is be gentle, be persistent, and be consistent. So maybe every other night at dinner, we do a practice called Thorns and Roses, where every person at the table says one thing that's a thorn in their life and one thing that's a rose.
Mm.
And since everybody's doing it, it becomes quite normal
mm-hmm.
for people to admit that things are sometimes hard.
That sounds like it would be a great exercise that families could initiate almost immediately, you know?
Yeah, and it really helps because you've got to have a way in, and there's no way in to a young person's
mm-hmm.
inner world if you haven't opened up your own door first.
Well, you've shared with us a number of options and interventions that can be utilized to address some of this bullying behavior. And we see a lot of anti-bullying programs that seem to miss the mark, and still we see a rise in the youth violence. What else, in your opinion, in these last few minutes, would you say contributes to this youth violence that we're seeing?
Well, what contributes to any violence is extreme conditions, whether it be poverty, whether it be hatred, whether it be mental illness, and a lack of connection. So with this huge digital age, we're always connected, but we're not very connected. And I think what we've seen, and a study just came out, the only programs that really work to reduce violence are programs that focus on peer-led initiatives, like we have at AHA Peace Builders, and also programs that really focus on embodied social-emotional intelligence, which means learning how to be with people, whether they're like us or not like us, whether we disagree with them, but learning we're all better when we're in it together. Mm-hmm. That is what we all need to focus on. And the zero tolerance, the just say no, the punishment, they now know these are not effective in reducing school violence. They just turn kids into narcs and make people afraid. And that does not create a peaceful community.
What effect does this increased xenophobia, at least this is what I see, that's spreading across the country have on bullying behavior?
Well, I just heard from a junior high principal that the xenophobia, and let's break that down for people, the fear and the hatred of the, quote, other, the fear of difference.
Different, yes.
That this junior high school principal, who's been there a long time, he said, ever since he's seen more of this xenophobia on the airwaves, he has seen young kids mimicking it on a daily basis.
Really?
Horrible.
That's horrible. Does this bullying behavior continue into adulthood if it's not addressed?
Of course. Okay. In fact, we're seeing a lot of that on the airwaves right now. I mean, you know, when people can be disrespectful to people in high offices or in the judicial system, and treat them as if they are a speck of dirt and don't have any honor in the office, that's what a person who's been bullying their whole life looks like.
Good point. Interesting statistic. 60% of people who were considered bullies in grades 6 through 9 are convicted of at least one crime by the time they turn 24.
If we don't help with people with bullying behavior, they definitely become hard and they become sociopathic in their behaviors. I'm not saying they are sociopathic, but they become people who cannot feel and cannot feel other people, which leads to criminal behavior, or at least white-collar or blue-collar crime. The white-collar criminals, I'm going to say this as well, get away with it because they can hide behind money. But I'll tell you something, that when we allow people to take enormous bonus payoff while other people lose their pensions, that is just white-collar bullying behavior.
Well, we engage in it at a federal level. When you think about it, we reinforce it with many of our policies are, you know, reinforce bullying behavior. And it indicates that it's those who bully are the ones who are successful and get over most of the time.
Well, yes, but let me be clear on one thing, and I think this is super important in my own belief system, but also might help your audience. They get away with it, meaning they still have money and power. But I, in my private practice, work with a lot of billionaires who have, quote, everything people think people want. But because of their bullying behavior, they have chronic health problems. They have unhappy relationships. They're divorced multiple times. So on an emotional level, no one gets away with bullying behavior, because to be that way with people means, on a very deep level, you're not connected to other people.
Well,
you don't have empathy. And if you don't have empathy, you aren't really very loved. You may be feared, but you're not loved.
Dr. Fried, I would like to say thank you so much for sharing your expertise on our program. Youth violence is unfortunately becoming more and more prevalent, and folks like Dr. Freed are trying to make a difference. To my listening audience, thank you for tuning in. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.